Today's opening tip, Kelly Oubre. Kelly Oubre, I don't know why I said it that way. He received a technical foul after blowing a kiss at Montrezl Harrell. Now, Richard, he did this in Phoenix and didn't get text, but
well, nobody was watching when he did it in Phoenix. Nobody was watching when he did it.
Richard!
Am I lying?
You're from Arizona.
I'm telling you that no one was watching. I talked to everybody from Arizona. That's why.
That's not kind. Kelly Oubre.
Is that his name?
That is apparently his name.
Listen, man.
Welcome to the jump.
You make your first three of the season, you can blow a kiss.
You can.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. I'm Rachel Nichols alongside two men with notable NBA jewelry, 2016 NBA champ Richard Jefferson, 2008 Finals MVP Paul Pierce. They don't give you an extra ring for that, Paul, but I feel they should.
You got a trophy, though. You got an extra trophy.
And you have like the little replica kind of thing, or they give you one and that's it. You get to keep it.
You got to buy the replica.
Oh, you got to buy it.
Got to buy the replica.
Things you didn't know about the NBA. Coming up, Kyrie Irving spoke to the media for the first time just a few hours ago. He talked about taking time off and his outlook going forward as he prepares to return to action on Wednesday. We'll get to that in a minute. First, though, we didn't know what it would feel like. NBA teams playing in the middle of a pandemic, in empty arenas, with fake crowd noise and rosters that on any day resemble a hunk of Swiss cheese. Would games even feel real? Or was this going to feel like watching a season's worth of pickup at LA Fitness? Well, guess what? They're real and they're spectacular, at least when the stars gather like they did yesterday.
I got that.
It turns out if you throw KD, James Harden, and Giannis on one court and LeBron, AD, Steph, and Draymond on another, some of the best basketball players in the world still play like it, even without teams being allowed to practice much these days. Exhibit A, Curry, finding the basket here. This was nice.
That wasn't a foul.
Finding Draymond on the pick and roll.
That was a travel.
Like all the time.
That was a foul. That was a travel.
And then finally hitting
this was
banger
monstrous.
From 28 feet.
There is no hate here.
On the clock.
That's absurd.
Right?
Over the defensive player of the year? Come on.
What year was
I don't know what's more impressive, that shot put the Warriors up by 5 after they've been down by 19 early in the game, or that the 6'3" Curry hit that over, as the guys here point out, the outstretched arms of Anthony Davis and his 7'6" wingspan. It was just vintage. Curry would finish with 26. Golden State as a whole appeared to be figuring something out about its rotations. A tweak in substitution patterns certainly seemed to help Kelly Oubre, for one. Still, the Lakers had the chance to win the game in the end. Instead, LeBron passes to Dennis Schroeder, who flings the ball in, direction of Alex Caruso.
What was going on?
A mess ensues. A timeout managed to reset things with 1.7 on the clock. All LeBron could do, launch this three that does not fall. All in all, it was not a flawless display of basketball. The Lakers in particular got sloppy. Neither LeBron nor AD ever really got going. And the officiating was a topic of conversation throughout.
Yeah.
But it sure was fun, as was the Nets-Bucks showdown earlier in the evening. If this in fact, turns out to be the Eastern Conference Finals, you can sign me up for 7 games. This one had 20 lead changes, including 8 in the final 5 minutes alone. Giannis had a strong game overall, finishing with 34 points, 12 rebounds, and 7 assists, although the Nets took the book on defending him to an extreme. You know how most teams give Giannis space from deep? Well, Brooklyn gave him basically an entire county, averaging 15 feet of pad, the most any player has been afforded from three since Second Spectrum began tracking this stuff 8 seasons ago. Now, the Nets were much more physical with Giannis otherwise, though. Check the little shove there from Durant.
But he initiated that. He stepped in front of somebody. I'd be mad if I was KD, too.
Harden, meanwhile, finishing with 34, including hitting that little float, that shot to put the Nets up 1. He also had that driving floater. Giannis would answer with a two-handed putback. A little authority there. But it was Durant who would have the last word, draining the go-ahead 3 on a pass from Harden.
Look at that.
Afterward, both players discuss why they seem to be meshing together better now than even when they played together in OKC.
We were young in Oklahoma City. You know, we're grown men now. You know what we want. We really know the game of basketball now. You know, we're not those young guys that just run around and want to just shoot and dunk all day.
We've been through a lot in this league, experienced a lot, and for us to bring it together now and combine what we've learned over this time and try to play great basketball, I think it was pretty seamless for us.
He Yeah, it is nice when the NBA looks like the regular NBA, with fans screaming and arenas full of energy and players who can take the court each night without someone sticking a Q-tip up their nose three times a day. But as we saw yesterday, anyone who tells you what's going on this season isn't real basketball is missing just how much spectacular there still is to see. So we will get to Kyrie's sound in a moment. But from last night's Nets win, Paul, what was your biggest takeaway?
Man, this is scary. I'm not even on. Because, look, they're only two games in. They beat the top seed in the Eastern Conference, and they haven't even got their chemistry together yet. I mean, yeah, they're scoring points and getting assists. They're turning the ball over a lot. So you got to expect those to come down in the next few weeks as they get to know one another, as they implement Kyrie Irving. But, man, like I said earlier, it's like having Jordan and Jordan on the same squad. It's like who's number two?
No, I kid you not.
I mean, seriously.
With all due respect to the two-time MVP, the two best players in the Eastern Conference are on the Nets, right? And it's James Harden and it's Kevin Durant. And mainly the reason why I say that is not because of Giannis' defense and all that. It's more because when it comes down to the last 30 seconds of a game and you're in the postseason or you're in a moment where you need it, they have the two best players in the conference when it comes to knocking that down. So the postseason is going to be...
Could be three with Kyrie.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, obviously, when you talk about the last 30 seconds,
I mean,
you know, Kyrie talking about, you know, I finally have somebody that can knock down that shot. Well, congratulations. Now you got two of them.
Now you got two of them. And look, this is the problem, too. You talk about the end of a playoff game. I mean, we're skipping some steps here, obviously, but you talk about the end of the playoff game with Giannis. I mean, you guys always tell me a big man, that's a tough position to put a big man in, to be depending on him finishing, especially if he's struggling at the free throw line. And we saw Giannis was better at the line last night. He had that game against the Mavericks the other night where I think he was 1 of 10 for the line. But his free throw shooting overall, guys, this season, he's at 59%. 4 years ago, he was at 77%, and it's just gone down every year since.
Well, pressure, like when people talk about pressure, a lot of times it rears its head in different places, right? Giannis now feels the pressure to win a championship. He feels the pressure to be MVP. And sometimes that pressure, it's not going to show up in your ability to dunk. It's going to show up in, like, the moments and in those little bitty things, whether it's your three-point, whether it's your free throws, and you can see the decline. So I don't know, as the pressure has gone up and his free throw percentage has gone down, like, physically, he's still one of the most dominant guys we've ever seen, but like that pressure and the technique, that's where it's starting to show in his game.
He needs a closer, simple and plain. He needs a superstar closer like Shaq had Kobe and Wade. Mm-hmm. He needs that guy. I'm not sure Middleton could be that guy. He's a great piece and he's having a great year. He'll be an all-star. Mm-hmm. But we saw how they struggled down the stretch, and if Giannis can't make free throws or hit perimeter shots consistently down the stretch, then who's going to be that guy? And that's why I just don't have faith. Regardless of Milwaukee Bucks, they may finish first in the conference. I just don't have faith in them come playoff time because of that.
And look at that shot. Now, this is the thing. Milwaukee Bucks fans, we're not saying that your team isn't great. We're not saying that you can't get to the conference finals. We're not saying that you can't win a championship.
You guys are just talking about the most elite level. These guys are champions. They're talking about that nuance of the most elite.
That's what you need to win.
Let's just say the last two shots. Right? The last two shots of that game were taken by Chris Middleton, who's a very, very good player and all-star. The last two shots for the Nets will be taken by James Harden, Kevin Durant, or possibly Kyrie Irving. Right. Let's just put that in perspective. Three future Hall of Famers versus, you know, all-stars, right? Versus an all-star, right? And I know we're jumping ahead when we talk about that, but you got two MVPs, leading scorers, all these different accolades versus Chris Middleton. And that's not a disrespect. That's just the reality.
No, it's just saying Chris Middleton's probably not one of the top five players in the NBA right now, which is an okay assessment.
It's okay assessment.
And I wouldn't say they struggled down the stretch. They were going. It was exciting. Lead for lead change, point for point, you know, hit for hit. But yes, at the end, it was the Nets who came through. And they will be more powerful, more firepower with Kyrie Irving back. Probably not much longer for him to be out. He practiced for the first time with the team today. And Nets coach Steve Nash said it's great to have him back in the building. He expects Kyrie to play tomorrow against the Cavs. Kyrie missed the last seven games due to personal reasons and COVID protocols. And here he was addressing the media for the first time. Take a listen.
I'm wondering if you were aware that you had violated the health and safety protocols and what that process was like for you in coming back and going through that investigation, one, and then secondly, what your communication was like with the team while you were away.
Happy to be back. Happy to be around these guys. Address the team, address everybody that needed to be addressed. Now it's time to move on.
I just was circling back on the health and safety front.
Happy to be back. Thank you. I'm a hometown kid, so, you know, things hit a little different when, you know, family or personal stuff going on, and that's up to me to handle that as a man. But yeah, I just take full accountability for my absence with the guys, and, you know, just had a conversation with each one of them, and we move on. It's, you know, pretty interesting in watching when you take a break from everything. There's just so many assumptions about what's going on, and so many people feel like they know me best, and they have no idea who I am, nor what I'm about, or what I stand for, or even attempt to take the time, or even for me to invite them to take the time. So it's a two-way street. And when things become overwhelming in life, you know, you just got to take a step back and realize what's important. That's a big thing. I just want honesty. And in order to be honest, I got to be honest myself. And that's the first thing. So I know I can talk in circles and I know all these words get used, but I'm just being honest here. It's been a lot to balance. And now it's, I called for help. And now I have just so many mentors and so many people reaching out and, you know, just taking things off my plate that were never mine in the first place. And they are better suited for that position. So I'll play my role on this big team of changing the world, and others will do the same.
So pretty expansive there at the end. Richard, what's your reaction to Kyrie's comments?
Well, I actually got criticized when I said I hope he gets whatever, you know, emotional, whatever, mentally, you know, whatever help he needs, whether it's a lot going on and he needed to have mentors, people reach out to him, people check in. I said that a couple weeks ago.
You said that on the show a couple days ago, yeah.
Because it's more of like, hey, Kyrie, if Kyrie needs some time, we all get overwhelmed. And athletes are, it's the literally the only job where you don't just get to be like, hey, you know, I need a couple days off. Now, I understand the money. I understand the months off. But if in the middle of the thick of it, you're dealing with something and you need to take time off, shout out to, you know, Kevin Love and DeMar DeRozan that have really talked a lot about, you know, dealing with their mental health. And so whatever he needed, if he got what he needed and he now has an infrastructure that will allow him to deal with it, good for him. I'm glad to have him back.
Yeah, it was good to just see him smile.
Yeah.
You know, just to have him back. He's one of our game's greats. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all go through our trials and tribulations. And the only thing is, when you go through these things, it's about the respect of the organization and your teammates. The constant, because when he first went away, it was no communication. Nobody knew what was going on. That's what your teammates, that's what the organization is there for you, to help you in those times. I know you have family. They can help you also. It's just the only thing I had a problem with was the communication. We all, like I said, we go through the things that we go through in life, and sometimes it's tough to step away from the game. But I use the game to help me get through these things also. Mm-hmm. I, like, needed to be on the court when I went through my troubles. I needed to be in practice. I needed to be around guys who relate to some of the things that we all go through as professional players and role models.
Yeah.
And Kyrie noted that his family lives locally and that he said that hits different. Obviously, your involvement with your family, if something is going on in your family or even if something's just going on with him, everybody is there and around, which is a little bit different.
Home is that, but one of the things that he talked about was like, oh, well, a lot of people just started to assume. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what happens when people assume is because there was no communication. So I think they're like, he takes some ownership of this. I think people that were, you know, questioning him or criticizing, not criticizing him, but more of like asking him what was going on or alluding to different things. Mm-hmm. Well, that also falls on you, right? That falls on you to communicate like, hey, I'm dealing with some personal stuff. I need some time away. And, you know, hopefully he learns from this. And if he needs more time or whatever it is, it can be addressed.
I mean, look, he did say, he said, people assume they know about me. And he said, without even talking to me. And then he very quickly corrected himself. He said, or I don't want to let them in to talk to me. And he said, that's a two-way street, which I certainly appreciated him making that distinction. There were repeated questions at the beginning of, hey, what was going on with you, basically? And you heard him say over and over again, hey, I've addressed it with the people I need to address. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that there was enough information there, especially eventually as he got into talking more, for Brooklyn Nets fans of the team?
He doesn't owe, and this is, I want to say this as a person that has been a Net lifer, he owes the fans very little. And I mean this from a respect place. He owes the teammates. Mm-hmm. He owns, because he, you know, hypothetically, you could be traded, you could retire, and the fans, like, you don't owe them an answer. Barry Sanders, they're still looking for him in Detroit, right? Calvin Johnson, they're still looking for him, right? Like, you can up and retire and not say anything to anybody. So I don't say that. You owe it to the people in the locker room, the people that have supported you, the people that you go to war with, the people that you go to battle. And if those guys are cool, then it's not up to the media, it's not up to the fans, it's only the people that he has to show up with everything.
Yeah, you say the people who support him, the fans support him.
I understand that, you know, but you can't, if you've got millions and millions of fans, you can't individually address them. You can't tell everybody. No, you've got to have some parts of your life that are private.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's my only thing, is that as long as the people in the locker room are okay with him, then Kyrie can move forward and be the great player that he is, right? It's just tough when, you know, you're that individual.
Go out and play well, win games, everybody will forget everything.
There you go.
Well, it looks like they're playing well already without him. And then, boy, just add another elite player into the mix. Mm-hmm. Wow. We will keep watching. Welcome back to The Jump, back to the Warriors-Lakers game. Golden State's 19-point rally was their second-largest comeback of the season. Remember, they came back from 22 to beat the Clippers on January 8th. Steph described post-game what a performance like this means to his team going forward.
It's just a step in the right direction, but we have to be able to put a couple of these together in a row. And they're all learning lessons in terms of the caliber of team that you're playing at that, you know, at the top of the West that's been established, has been there before, and you know, good measuring stick for us. So 7-6, we're obviously, you know, in a good position, but we have to be able to put a couple of these in a row to really prove that this is who we can be and who we are. And you know, that's the challenge in this league. Every night, no matter who you're playing, you got to really fight for a win.
Richard, it's your old teammate, Steph Curry. What do you think the significance was of this win for Golden State?
Well, just really quickly, right? Let's look at their record. If let's say hypothetically Klay was playing, that's a 10-3 team, right? Like, I'm just saying.
I live in the real world.
No, but I'm saying, but the 7-6, like, this is kind of right where they should be. They should be in that 7-8 spot, and if they were fully healthy, they could be at the 2-3 spot. So I'm glad, but for a while, they weren't playing like this. This is a team that's very capable of beating anybody on a given night. The lesson that I think they learned here is that they have so many young players, and as long as they keep fighting, if they can stay close in games the last 5 minutes, now you have Steph, now you have, like, the guys that can really close games. So it's just for them, they got to keep it within a range, like in that last 5 minutes.
I really believe that the key to this team is Oubre, because you know what Steph is going to give you. You know, Wiggins, he's somewhat starting to be more consistent, but Oubre, if he can give them consistent numbers between 15 and 18 a night, this team is going to be dangerous. You know, he does all the little things. He can guard your best player. He's a slasher. And if he starts knocking down some threes consistently, then that's what's going to make the Warriors scary. He has to go back and look at this game, and this is what you take from this. Like, Oubre, if you become a consistent player for us, we're going to win a lot more games.
And look, Steve Kerr has gotten a lot of questions about possibly shifting the starting lineup. He has not wanted to do that, but he did make a change last night in the substitution patterns for Wiggins and Oubre, and basically gave Oubre more space without Steph on the floor, more opportunities to have that. Do you think that that's the kind of thing that can get him going more?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're always going to go back to, hey, we just beat the defending champs. Now, I know the Lakers didn't look like their Lakers selves, but it's a start in the right direction. It gives them confidence. So, Oubre, if you're watching this, look at these tapes. Stay aggressive. Mm-hmm. Both ends of the court, you could bring this team a lot of wins with just your energy and your consistency on the offensive end. And so hopefully this is a sign of things to come, and Steve Kerr can put him in positions to where he could be successful.
Yeah, and don't try and prove anything. Like, we know, like, Kelly Oubre didn't start off the season shooting well, but you are a slasher that can shoot. You are not a shooter that can slash. Right? No, there's a difference, right? There's a very big difference. So continue to slash, continue to get dunks, continue to do all the things and shoot free throws and do all the things that and play defense. You do those things, then your jump shot is an addition to what you can do. Don't go out there and be like, oh, I'm 0-6, and now you're not slashing, now you're not dunking, now you're not playing defense.
Right.
Once you change your mentality from that space, that's when I think Kelly Oubre can become more consistent, because he's not worried about that, because that's just an addition to his game.
All right, I want to move over to Houston. Let's get to Victor Oladipo. Impressive in his Rockets debut last night, dropped 32 points, 9 assists. Now, the Rockets did lose to the Bulls. Victor sounded much different, let's say, than just James Harden did after his last Rockets game. Take a listen.
Our better days are ahead of us, definitely.
Not even close, honestly.
Our better days are ahead. Everyone just stay patient.
We're just not good enough.
But our better days are ahead. This is only the beginning.
Obviously, chemistry, talent-wise, just everything, and it was clear.
We can even be better, honestly.
I literally, you know, I've done everything that I can.
No, I'm happy. I'm definitely happy.
The situation is crazy. You know, it's something that I don't think can be fixed.
The sky's the limit for this team.
Yeah. Thanks.
So two very different assessments of the Rockets by two All-Stars. Now, I will say, James, what he's looking for to do at this point in his career is win a championship, and that is his line, whereas Victor is looking to refine his form and play well and compete. Absolutely. And obviously advance deep into the playoffs, and I am not saying Victor doesn't want to win a championship, but it is a little different situation.
Goals are definitely different on both sides, but check this out. When I get rid of James Harden, I'm happy to see this type of performance.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, a guy that I can say, hey, Victor Oladipo was an all-star in this league. Hopefully he can regain that form. But you come off that superstar, you want to see something in return. And he showed him something last night because you have Wall. You know, he's going to come back. You're going
right.
to have
he didn't play last night.
DeMarcus
yeah.
Cousins. Hopefully he can give you something. So, you know, silly for this team is playoffs, which I don't think this year they'll make. But when you get an accusation like that, acquisition like that, then you're happy with what you got at Oladipo.
You know, at the end of the day, like you wanted James to be there. You wanted all the things to work out, but it didn't. But the good news is when people show up with the right attitude and the right mentality, yeah. it's like, oh, okay, all right. It doesn't matter what our future is or where we're going. People have the right mentality. People want to be here. People are excited to be here. And Victor Oladipo is talented. They have a lot of talent on that team. They can make the playoffs. Like you said, I think that's the ceiling for mm-hmm. this team. Whether they do this year with all the changes, it might be difficult. But look,
they've got a lot.
Currency. That's what they call it, a currency.
Our researcher, Michael Schwartz, felt like he was like a beautiful mind moving all of these around on the table here. It is a lot. And look, you know what? All three of those guys you mentioned, John Wall, Biggie Cousins, Victor Oladipo, they're all fighters, man. Mm-hmm. These are guys who had various injuries over the years that they could have just kind of faded, right? Mm-hmm. And Victor, his start in the NBA was not what people expected in Orlando. And I just think that we have seen all three of these guys fight back over mm-hmm. and over and over again. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see them fight back this time. All right, guys, coming up on the show, teams like the Knicks and Warriors won yesterday.
Ooh.
Currently sitting at the top 8 in their conferences, but will they make the playoffs? So we're going to take a way too early look at who's in and who's out of the playoff picture. It's a shortened season. You got to look at this stuff early. First, though, here's what The Jump recommends for today on ESPN+. Our Zach Lowe writes about Brandon Ingram's superstar potential. Find out more about how Ingram developed his drive, why he once texted a teammate, quote, "I'm not going to stop until I'm the best." Look for that. Welcome back to The Jump. We are at the 4-week mark of the season, which this is really interesting. Recent history shows a majority of the playoff teams are likely set. Take a look at last year's standings 4 weeks in. 13 of the 16 teams in playoff positioning ended up, in fact, making the postseason. In fact, 9 of the last 10 seasons, either 6 or 7 teams from each conference that were in the playoffs at the 4-week mark stayed in the top 8. So as we start with the East standings today, where the last two East champs, the Heat and the Raptors, are within a game of the Knicks, Cavs, and Hawks. Richard, who is the one team most at risk in the East of falling out of the playoffs? Because I know it's early, but history shows only one of these teams is likely to fall out.
Oh, that's tough. I'm going to have to say, God, it's going to hurt, but the Cavs. The Cavs and the Hawks are the two teams. I think.
You think both of them are not going to
make it? I don't think both of them. Like, both of them won't make it.
Wow.
I just, look, that's tough. Because the Heat, how are we going to say the Heat aren't going to make it?
Well, that's what. So
they got so much talent.
The point is that if you put the Heat or Raptors, traditional powerhouses of the past few years, in.
And
then
the reason why I'll say this is because of this. When you look at last year's team, the Suns started off super, super hot, and then they slowly trickled down.
Yes.
Timberwolves started off super, super hot, and then trickled down. So even though that month chart had them in there, where they were 2 weeks before was even higher,
right.
And they just kept going down. So that's why it's like I look at those teams, and those teams started off well, and now they're slowly trickling down.
So you would say both the
Cavs. Yeah, I'm sorry, Cavs fans. I love you guys to death, but no, I think it's going to be tough.
I'm hopeful about the Hawks. What about you?
I'm going with the Cleveland Cavaliers also. I just think,
Do you both think the Knicks are staying in?
I think Coach Thibodeau is going to do wonders for that ball club. He's changed the culture. They're playing defense now.
Yeah.
And so I believe that the Knicks will make it. But Atlanta and Cleveland, they're two of the worst defensive teams in the league, and that's not a recipe for making the playoffs. No. And I think Miami Heat, who will be one of the better defensive teams, are going to get in.
Well, and again, look at the Cavs, even the makeup of their team. Like, I love their young talent, love their backcourt. Yeah. You know, they got Jared Allen, they got Drummond, they got JaVale McGee. So it's like, even then, they kind of have a little bit less of a traditional team,
yeah.
And you're going to depend on a very young backcourt, not having Porter Jr., you know, playing for, you know, personal reasons and dealing with stuff. If he was playing and giving them their 15, 16 right. a night, then you're like, okay, you got guards, you got wings, you got veteran bigs, but it's just like, it's just not quite clicking in to say those young players are going to lead them through this stretch is going to be tough. Next year, I think the Cavs make the postseason.
All right, I want to move over to the West. A half a game separates teams 4 through 8, and two of last season's playoff teams, the Nuggets and the Mavericks,
ooh,
are currently a game out of 8th. So, Paul, which team in the West is currently most at risk to miss the playoffs?
Memphis will not make it this year. And you know who else I think is going to fall out? I think the Portland Trail Blazers. And that has, I mean, because they're dealing with injuries.
You're betting against Dame Lillard.
Well, it's not Dame Lillard. It's his squad. I mean, he's losing Nurkic. He's lost C.J. McCollum. You know, these guys are going to be going by from 4 to 6 weeks and 72 games. And then not to mention they're going to go at some point go through some protocol issues where they're missing players. And so I can see them easily falling out in Denver.
Are we doing a play-in again? They're doing a play-in.
So they are doing. I will say this, and that's where the Blazers may be able to do exactly what they did last year, which was make a push right there at the end. If they are whole health-wise toward the end of the season, again, the teams that are in the 9 and 10 spot will have a chance to at least be in the mix for a play-in.
Look, can we talk about the Nuggets, though, for a second?
Yes.
Jokic is having an MVP season, right? He is first-team All-NBA.
Or an MVP consideration season.
MVP consideration. Thanks, Rach.
I'm just
kidding. He's having that type of season, and they
are. Is he more MVP right now?
Well, okay, look, to your point, yeah, like you said. But, like, the fact that they are where they are at, like, I understand that you want to push, but, guys, they had gone further and further and further every single year, got better every single year, and now you're not even in the postseason a month in. There's some things there that need to be addressed and need to be changed and need to be tweaked because you shouldn't be here at this point in time, not with that roster, right? If you were hovering at the 6-7 or if you were hovering at the 4-5, but to go conference finals to out the postseason or out of the postseason currently with a month in, something ain't right.
Well, you know that team. You played on that team where you sat and watched other people on that team. And this was a team we expected to have at least a degree of continuity. I know the Jeremy Grant situation, but they have young stars. They've been developing. What do you think is happening?
They're not that young anymore. I'm just saying, when you're in your second contract and you're a year and two into your contract and you have all NBA guys, first teamers like Jokic, who I still think is the best big in the league. I think he's better than Embiid.
Okay.
And so when you have all of that, there's no excuse for that. Their defense isn't great. You know, I think you have young players trying to make jumps still. I think Jamal Murray, I think Porter's trying to make jumps. And so, you know, there's a lot of, you know, bowl, like ones. You know, there's just a lot of stuff going on. But they should not be where they are right now.
I really think Kevin not having Porter Jr. is really hurting this
team.
Michael Porter Jr.
Yeah.
He gives them athleticism and size, a stretch four. The guy who's slowly turning into a star in this league that we saw in the playoffs. And I really think it's hurt them early.
Yeah.
All right, guys, before we go to break, I want to recognize reigning WNBA MVP Asia Wilson. She was honored by her alma mater, South Carolina, Monday with a statue on campus. She was a 3-time first-team All-American during her 4 years
that's
in Columbia.
Awesome.
And during the ceremony, Wilson noted the progress from when her grandmother lived just outside the university to today. Listen to this. This was amazing.
My grandmother, Hattie Rakes, grew up in this area, actually four blocks from the governor's mansion to be exact. When she was a child, she couldn't even walk on the grounds of the University of South Carolina. She would have to walk around the campus just to get to where she needed to go. If only she was here today to see that the same grounds she had to walk around, it now is the same grounds that houses a statue of her granddaughter.
Thank you. crunch time here on The Jump. Commissioner Adam Silver said Tuesday that the league has discussed having players receive COVID vaccines to educate and influence the public regarding its safety and effectiveness. Richard, is this something you'd like to see the league do?
You know, it's tough to say players jumping forward or jumping the line, but I do understand that in our community, you know, there is not a lot of trust when it comes to these things. So I think if the players and the Players Association, Michelle Roberts, believes in it, then I think it's actually a pretty good thing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, NBA players are role models, and they're very influential. So if they trust it, then, you know, let's see. I'm willing to take it. Hey, I can be that guy.
You'll be that guy.
I'm willing to take it.
I think it's scary, man. Yeah. Seriously. Look, absolutely. I think the whole quote jumping the line or whatever is, it's not jumping the line if it's something the FDA wants you to do to set an example and possibly get a bunch of other people vaccinated. We'll see. CJ McCollum out at least 4 weeks with a fractured foot. McCollum averaging 26.7 points a game this year, 5 assists. Without him yesterday, Blazers were blown out by the Spurs by 21. Paul, this is what you were talking about. Richard, do you agree with Paul? What do you think their chances of playoff contention are?
All-star level, you know, the Shark, you know, CJ, Christian James, my guy.
Mm-hmm, Christian James, the Shark.
But, yeah, without Nurkic, without him, it's just going to be a tough stretch. And they're not, like, they don't have much of a cushion right now.
That's my Shark voice.
And that's an injury that can take a little longer than 4 weeks. I had a fracture in my foot, and it took about 6 to 8.
And there's no conditioning you can do. There's nothing you can do. You're just kind of there,
That can take a little longer than expected.
All right, let's talk Trae Young. 2 rebounds shy of a triple-double in yesterday's win over the Wolves. Much-needed win, by the way, guys, for Atlanta. The Hawks are 2-6 in their last 8 games after starting the season 4-1. Some of that is due to Trae's early struggles. He's currently averaging about 7 fewer points a game than he did last season, and shooting his percentages down as well. He's also attempting 4 fewer shots per game. So, Paul, some of this is an adjustment, right?
Yeah.
And he's got a bunch of new players on the team. He's also their best facilitator, so he's trying to figure out kind of how to do everything that that team needs him to do. We've seen him in his rookie season, made a big adjustment after the first few months. What does he have to do now to adjust?
Well, he has to get through these tough stretches. I mean, he's just shooting the ball poorly. That comes and goes. And Trae has to continue to be Trae. He needs to be that go-to scorer who's looking, staying aggressive, getting to the line. And he does a great job at mixing it up with his balance between passing and scoring. So it's just he's in a slump right now, but he has to continue to stay aggressive. I mean, taking less shots is not him. He has to go full throttle to where he's giving them 25 to 30 a night and 10, 11 assists for them to be successful.
Yeah, I think it's a cool thing about Trae is that you get to watch the maturing process that he goes through. It's like, no one's going to be hot for 72 games. No one's going to be consistent. You're going to have weeks, you're going to have months, you're going to have whatever. But to watch him grow and figure it out, I think that's the most exciting thing for the Atlanta Hawks fans, that you know that they're dedicated to winning. They put a ton of talent around him, and it's just watching him figure it out. So to Paul's point, I think they're going to play better as the season progresses, but he's got to keep that aggression. It doesn't matter.
Well, first of all, Dame, I would say, and Steph, hot for 72 games, shooters, but it's not everybody.
Some of the greatest of all time. And again, they weren't like that at 23 years old.
No, of course. Yeah. And I mean, for you guys in general, for a guy who's been tabbed, and Paul, you were in this situation, you were young and yet still expected to lead the team.
Yeah.
You had so much attention on your shoulders. What's the best advice you have in general for balancing all that?
You just really got to ignore the naysayers.
Yeah.
You got to ignore me, ignore Richard, and just go out here and play. Because, you know, I got talked about when we were losing, putting up numbers, struggling, shooting, and I never let it. I let it go in one ear and out the other. You use it for motivation. This kid will be fine. He's going to be an all-star this year. You watch.
Yeah, I have no doubt. Just like he said, ignore me, ignore Paul. You're going to be just fine.
Ignore Shaq.
Ignore pretty much anyone that's not in your locker room. And
there you
shoot
go.
More.
But please come back and watch The Jump tomorrow. We'll be back at the same time.
Check us out.
They won't
be rooting for you, man.
We're rooting
Thanks for
you.
Thanks for watching.
Though.